WBAI. Thank you so much for tuning in to this morning's programming. We have all other 12 hours plus ahead. Stay right where you are. Trying to figure out, what is he talking about? 12 hours takes us up to midnight. Is there anything beyond that? You better believe it. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Thanks to listeners just like you. It's 12 noon in New York City with WBAI 99.5 FM. Coming up next, The Gary Null Show.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. Gary Null.
Open up your eyes, then you realize here I am with my everlasting.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. Always nice to have you with us for a very positive insight into how we can live a longer and healthier life, and things that we have under our control. For example, I'm going to talk about acupuncture, and you realize that just one single acupuncture treatment drops your blood pressure for over a month without medication. And vitamin C can encourage blood cancer stem cells to die. And burnout, I'll tell you what to take with an herb if you're burned out. And resveratrol, brand new information on how it impacts your arteries in a good way. And also one more study proving that physical exercise protects your heart. So we have a lot to share. And again, all of my articles are from the peer-reviewed literature from PubMed, and they're all from respected institutions. Now, we start with something that I'm a big believer in, and that is traditional Chinese medicine. And I believe that we should be using traditional Chinese medicine preventatively, prophylactically, and especially acupuncture. And I do. And every week I get my blood pressure and my pulse rate and heart rhythm, everything checked by a medical doctor who is from China and was a professor there and has had 40 years experience using acupuncture. He specialized in acupuncture. And it was interesting when I was asking him, what's the difference between, let's say, someone who, like chiropractors, a lot of chiropractors have expanded their practice of helping their patients, and chiropractic is a legitimate healing science, and they do so by taking a course and getting certified by the state so they can practice acupuncture. He said, well, it's completely different. He said, for example, in traditional Chinese medicine, how far you put the needle in, whether you rotate it at an angle, straight, left or right, and how long you rotate it. All of these subtleties make a big difference. And where on the vein or near the vein do you put the needle? And he talked about the meridian points. And I didn't realize there was a difference between Japanese acupuncture and Chinese acupuncture. There's a huge difference. And he said, but it's all in the results and being sensitive to the energy flow of the person. Well, here's the latest study to confirm that there's a very big benefit for those of you who may have high blood pressure. This was from the Susan Samuli Center for Integrative Medicine, University of California at Irvine. And emerging evidence from the study shows acupuncture may be an effective treatment for hypertension because acupuncture regulates blood pressure and blood flow and body temperature and also impacts the heart in a very positive way. So patients with hypertension treated with acupuncture experienced drops in their blood pressure that lasted for up to a month and a half. All right, that's with one single treatment. And a treatment generally takes about, 25 to 30 minutes. And it's functionally painless. sometimes if they put it in certain areas that down around the feet, the doctor will say, okay, this is going to be just a little uncomfortable, and that's it. Then you just relax and go into a meditative state. So imagine how many Americans have high blood pressure. Now imagine how many Americans are in what we call post-stable hypertension. That means they're stable because they're taking multiple medications. All of those medications have very serious side effects. So imagine that over a period of time, starting with once a week, and generally acupuncture is not expensive as medical treatments go. It's about $100 to $115. So I'm just a big fan of it because I see it works. All my friends have had problems, especially pain. It's been able to help them where other medications were not. And the pain is not only helped, but frequently the underlying cause is mediated in the process. So just to let you know, a cardiologist, Dr. John Longhurst, University of California, Irvine, and former director of the center, quote, "By using Western scientific rigor to validate an ancient Eastern therapy, we feel we have integrated Chinese and Western medicine and provided a beneficial guideline for treating a disease that affects millions of Americans." Yes, and kills a lot of Americans, too. It's one of the leading causes of death behind heart attack, then stroke, and both of those are caused by high blood pressure. And by the way, I'm still on the telephone. Hopefully this week I will be, according to our engineers, back at the microphone. Now, another good study, and this is from New York University, the Langone Health Center, vitamin C. Vitamin C may tell, meaning communicate, faulty stem cells in the bone marrow to mature and die normally instead of multiplying to cause blood cancers. And this is the finding of a study led by researchers at the Perlmutter Cancer Center at New York University, Langone Health, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell. So what we're now finding out is that certain genetic changes are known to reduce the ability of an enzyme called TET2 to encourage stem cells to become mature blood cells, which eventually die. In many patients with certain kinds of leukemia, and this vitamin C intervenes in this and causes those stem cells to die. Hence, vitamin C can directly encourage blood cancer cells to die and saves you, you know, from being affected by the cancer, leukemia. That's good news. Now, a lot of people are burned out, and understandably so, from different stressors. I mean, if you're rich, you know, you're famous, you're powerful, you live at a different level of reality than the average person, because all the rest of us have to go through all the daily rigors, more often than not doing things for ourselves. We cannot afford the help that wealthy people, well, they have nannies for their children, and they have counselors making sure their kids do their homework and pass their grades, and they have coaches to make sure their kids are number one in their athletic sport, where all the other kids, they just go out and, you know, play the sport, and it's not the big deal. But for professional parents, everything's a big deal, because achieving, winning, being number one is the sole game in their life, and they play that game with a very Machiavellian attitude. Needless to say, a lot of people get burned out in the process, just trying to achieve in a normal day in all the limitations we now have. Just imagine this. Imagine you used to relax by going for walks around Manhattan or the boroughs in the parks, Prospect Park, Central Park, Van Cortlandt Park, etc., and Eisenhower Park. Now, those are wonderful things to do. Now, why don't you take a look, see how few people are doing those now that there's all forms of increase in burglaries, robberies, muggings. Now, the sucker punch is back, where people run up behind someone and hit them in the head, frequently causing comas, serious brain concussions, and even death. Well, are you going to go out at night? And the answer is no, because I went around Central Park, not in the park at night, but around the whole perimeter of the park, meaning Central Park West, South and Fifth Avenue and Central Park North. I saw no one. When I say no one, I mean I walked from Lincoln Center to 89th Street. I didn't see one person pass me on the street. And when I did see some young people in restaurants or something, this is only, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, these were younger people. So you don't think that doesn't cause stress? And stress, chronic stress, leads to overproduction of cortisol and adrenaline? You bet. It exhausts your adrenal glands, so therefore you don't wake up with that vim and vigor you once had. So what do we do about it, no matter what the source of the burnout? Well, there's an herb that can help, and this is according to Wien University Medical School in Austria. It's rhodiola, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, rosea, R-O-S-E-A. And rhodiola, rosea, can help. It improves the symptoms of burnout. And that's the first trial to examine the effects of the botanical extract on this modern-day condition. And this was an open-label, multi-center, single-arm trial. Quote, encouraging basis for future clinical trials based upon how it helped people suffering from burnout. So if you're overstressed, St. John's wort is good, but this also can help you. Just, one more study that's out there. Now, from Toho, that's T-O-H-O University in Japan, an article published in the International Heart Journal, that's read by cardiologists and heart specialists all over the world, they looked at resveratrol. Resveratrol is what you get when you eat grapes, and especially grapes that still have the seeds in them. And that resveratrol has thousands of studies, and it proves arterial stiffness, especially if you have type 2 diabetes. And they did this with men and women who received 100 milligrams of resveratrol or a placebo every day for 12 weeks. And then they used a cardio-ankle vascular index, and that's a novel diagnostic measure of arterial stiffness that is a marker of atherosclerosis. Remember, I've said it many times in the past, but we have a lot of new listeners, and they haven't heard this possibly. Just imagine a water hose, brand new. It's very pliable, bends, no problem. Leave it out in the sun, leave it outside for 1 year. Now, go out and it's stiff, it's cracked. That's like your arteries. And that's what we don't want. We want arteries that are still supple and not stiff, because we don't want atherosclerosis. Well, what they found is resveratrol helped prevent that stiffness, and hence helps prevent a marker of atherosclerosis. It also helps with blood pressure, and that's important too. So at the end of the study, the resveratrol persons had significantly lower blood pressure, less oxidative stress, and decreased arterial stiffness in comparison with values obtained at the beginning of the study. So it makes a big difference. And the people who just took the placebo had no changes. So that's just something more that we can consider. Now, from the University of Sao Paulo, which is in Brazil, they found how physical exercise protects your heart. And it was through experiments with rats, and the study shows that aerobic training, that's your power walking, exercising by biking, jogging, all right, swimming, it reactivates a system that helps rid heart cells of dysfunctional mitochondria, or your energy factory. So regular exercise is considered an important form of treatment for heart failure, a condition in which the heart is unable to pump enough blood to meet the body's needs. Now, the benefits of exercise range from prevention of cachexia, or severe loss of weight and muscle mass. Do you ever notice that one day you look in the mirror and your thighs are not as muscular as they once were? Let's say maybe you're 50 and you think, wow, they look different than at 40. And frequently they are, because you're starting to lose muscle mass. And the older you get, the more resistance exercise. And what we find is that you've got to do it on a daily basis to improve your cardiac function, because that will postpone a degenerative process that causes progressive heart cell death. About 70% of heart failure patients die from the condition within 5 years. And a study done at the university, published recently in the journal Autophagy, helps to elucidate part of the mechanisms whereby aerobic exercise protects the sick heart. Basically, they found that aerobic training facilitates removal of dysfunctional mitochondria from heart cells. And that they didn't know before. And for those of you who haven't been listening to this program, the mitochondria are the organelles in charge of providing energy to your cells. So the removal of dysfunctional mitochondria increases the supply of ATP, which is adenosine triphosphate, the molecule that stores energy for the cell and reduces the production of toxic molecules such as oxygen-free radicals and reactive aldehydes, an excess of which damage the cell structure. And this was published in PLOS One. And so you want to live a longer life, have a healthier heart, just do your exercise. Also from Ordu University in Turkey, an article published in Psychiatry Research found that one carbon metabolism that includes vitamin B12 and homocysteine plus vitamin D deficiency could play a role in the onset of obsessive compulsive disorder. But I'll reverse it. By having adequate amounts of folic acid, vitamin D, and B12, you help prevent this. All right? And a lot of people, especially young people, who manifest the condition, it's very common, obsessive compulsive disorder, they live on junk foods. And junk foods deprive you of folic acid, B12, and also vitamin B6, and vitamin B1, and vitamin C, which then increases your homocysteine level. And you do not want an elevated homocysteine. You don't want one up around 15, 16, 17, 18, because it really increases your risk of heart attack and stroke. So just see that you take a multiple vitamin each day that have these in them. It's that simple, not difficult. Now, that's the latest on health and healing, and we're going to take a break. We have a lot of information today, including something very important to share with you. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll on a telephone today, so I apologize for the lack of the same audio quality that we would normally have if I was sitting in front of my microphone in our studio in Florida and then reaching out to our studio in New York, which then broadcasts all over the world. We have something very important, but I want to tell you right now how you can watch this, okay? You can go to prn.live. Then scroll down to the art where it says archives. And then look at today's date. And then punch in that, you know, click that, and that will take you to the actual video clips. Because talking about this is not the same as you watching it. And this is extremely important. And I've held off sharing this with you until we had enough corroborating evidence to show that the hypothesis, meaning it has not been proven, and when this first came to my attention nearly a year ago, I did not see the proof, but now we have compelling information from multiple scientists around the world and a whole team of scientists, several teams in New Zealand, with very credible people, experts in their field, people in nanotechnology who actually have patented in the field, PhDs in the field. So we're not having lay internet conspiracy theorists. This is really important. And I'm not saying this in any way to alarm or create fear, but rather to inform you of the irresponsible behavior of Anthony Fauci and all the people, Bill Gates and World Health Organization and Gavi and the CDC and all the other people involved, the dozens of people that you see on cable news who believed that everything was safe and effective and you don't have to worry. And indeed, initially, there was no science showing it was not safe and effective. I mean, after you get a vaccine, and then you assume that the vaccine's working, and so many people got this vaccine, more than any vaccine in world history, but it's none of what they told us is true. And that's dangerous. So I want you to watch. Watch this, because you're going to see something that should be of concern to anyone who got the vaccines. And the more vaccines you get, the more problematic it is. In fact, even today, the FDA is about to approve the next COVID vaccine, and yet they have no human studies on it at all, none. And so they're using a purely hypothetical, it is safe and effective, when they have no evidence to back it up. That is absolutely corrupt at every level. And also, shouldn't it tell you something when the President of the United States and Anthony Fauci and other individuals have gotten their four shots, they've gotten four vaccines, not only did they get COVID, but then they got COVID again and again, and then when they used the so-called, best antiviral drug, it didn't work. And there's a lot of information on why it wouldn't work and how dangerous it is. So, mind you, when the leaders of the movement are telling us things prove to be just the opposite, we should be concerned. So we're going to go now to this clip. And after the two clips that we're going to show you, the first clip is a clip where Mike Adams is showing you in a laboratory what was taken out of the heart of a corpse at autopsy. Now, you see, when they say a person died of a heart attack or a stroke, that's almost always because of a ischemic episode or deprivation of blood and oxygen to the heart itself with a clot. And so they might find a clump and be able to remove that. But if you don't have an autopsy and you don't have a really good pathologist doing it, you're not going to know this. And only now, after we contacted Dr. Cole and dozens of other physicians and scientists to share this information, to say, is there legitimacy to this? Should people be concerned? Should we ask for a national moratorium on any further vaccines until independent researchers, not associated with the CDC or the FDA or National Institute of Health, go in there and do these autopsies? Because what you're seeing came from the clot. And you'll see where they wash off the blood, and then it looks like rubber bands, all these little tentacles. And that's a whole vial filled. I mean, it's a, like a 100 cc vial filled with these. And what you're going to find out now, what you're going to see now in multiple different electron microscopic images from the New Zealand doctor, and others who have done these, is that they're now using thermography and they can see these in the body. Wow. And they can't be dissolved with warfarin or something that would normally help dissolve a clot. And first Mike describes it, but he's showing you the phenomena. But then the people in Australia, New Zealand, are actually doing the work in multiple locations, and multiple scientists showing you, this stuff is gelling together. Now, you can watch the full video, which is over an hour long. I'm only showing you about 3 to 4 minutes of it from New Zealand, but he's summarizing it. He first summarizes all the problems, and then he goes into great detail showing you the science supporting what he is saying. So all the science supporting what he's saying, it's just in the rest of the video. You can watch the whole video for yourself. But we've never shown this until now because we have not had enough confirming evidence to explain to people that this is a really serious thing. And we'll get into how serious it is and how many people could be affected. And if it is as serious as what these scientists are saying, how many people might end up dying. All right? And no one in the media is touching this, nor do I believe will they. Let's go to the clip.
Yeah.
Oof.
Make it that graphic right there.
No, but I mean, but look, this is what's in people's body. This is what's being removed from people's damaged hearts, and you can see why. I mean, my God, for again, for the radio viewers, so I don't even know how to describe it. You got to just see the image.
But go back to the microscope image, if you would, please. Yeah, help describe this for the radio viewers, but we're going to start zooming in on this, and we're going to get a lot more contrast and information. I have to refocus as we move. But what I want you to notice about this, and again, this is coming out of people who were formerly alive. People are walking around with these things growing inside
right.
their arteries and blood vessels, okay? These are massive. These are not the size of just one protein. These are like billions of proteins, and these are strands. In fact, I want to show you something. Let me zoom out. I want to show you something that's just going to blow your mind. If I grab this with the forceps here, and you can see that on screen, and I start to pull, I want to show you how much I can pull and how strong these are before this breaks.
Oh, wow.
You see how they are fibrous and they are strong. They're like rubber bands.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm Harrison Smith. I'm sitting in here with Mike Adams, since he is going to be a little bit preoccupied putting together this very intense-looking science experiment. And so I'm just here sort of to sit in for the audience and maybe ask questions about what exactly you're doing, Mike. What are we looking at here?
Okay, so as I mentioned before, we have acquired these clots that have been removed from deceased patients who died suddenly.
Right.
And the embalmers have never seen these clots before until the vaccines began to be administered. And the embalmer that provided these to me, who is our guest today, is Richard Hirschman. So he'll be chiming in on this. These are the clots, and I hope we can get maybe a kind of a, I don't know, an up-close shot.
We can do maybe a,
But anyway, I'm going to take these out of the vial here, and again, live on radio and the video broadcast, I'm going to take these out. And I'm going to stain these with iodine, and then I'm going to prepare these on the slide, and then we're going to look at magnifications up to 1,500 times and see what these are. And most importantly, Harrison, is that what we're showing on the microscope right now is a drop of blood from one of the crew members who donated this drop this morning, just with a little diabetes, you know, lance type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to show you that, like, that drop of blood is coagulating right now, and there it is live. That is very different from what we are about to see.
That's a healthy, normal piece of blood.
Yes, that is now dried. So it's a little scab,
basically. Right.
You could say it's like a one drop scab.
And so for our radio listeners, the vial that Mike is holding, it looks like it's filled with little worms. I mean, they look like little tiny earthworm looking things. It's really pretty gross, and that came out of a human being.
Well, yes, and these are only the very smallest examples. There are more vials I have that are, some of these strands are the thickness of your finger.
Oh, Lord.
And what's happening, and you're going to hear this from our physician guest who's joining us in the next segment with his voice altered to protect his identity, is that these are blocking femoral arteries. They're blocking carotid arteries. Some people are having to have femoral artery bypass surgery in order to not die. And these are on the smaller size here. When these lodge near your hands or toes, they will cut off circulation to your extremities, which is called peripheral cardiovascular disease typically, and it can cause your fingers and toes to turn black. Now there's a photo, there's an up-close photo of the vial. There's another photo for the producers that should show a man's fingers that have turned black.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what happens when these clots block blood circulation.
Looks like a very extreme case of frostbite or something.
Exactly, which is the same thing. Is, you know, your extremities have lost blood flow.
Right.
But the thing is, Harrison, and I mean, you're welcome. I brought extra gloves if you want to get in on this. But I don't mean to joke about this. This is serious business. But these have the consistency of small rubber bands.
Right. No, it's... It's horrifying looking in person. Hopefully it's coming across on the camera, because it really does look like something from a horror film. And these were drawn out of somebody's veins who had died of, you know, a sudden heart attack or something similar. And he's taking them out of the vial here now. And there's already pre-dyed ones, but we're doing this live and actually going to take the real thing. And you say dye it with iodine.
Yes.
Right?
Iodine is used in the standard Gram staining techniques for microbiology, along with violet colored dyes. But what I found is that iodine, yeah, this came out of a living, well, a previously living person. And the reason this is important for us to study is because, you know, these people are dead and they can't speak.
Right.
We have to speak for them. So, by the way, these samples have all been sterilized. For anybody concerned about medical procedures, these have been sterilized with ultraviolet radiation, as well as ethyl alcohol treatments and so on. So there's no danger to us, but I am wearing gloves, as you might expect.
Yeah, and folks, if you are a radio listener, you've got to get to band.video and see this and share this imagery, because even just seeing this thing, this entity that came out of someone's veins, I mean, that alone is enough to convince you there's something very disturbing going on here.
So this is just iodine, folks. This is not blood. This is just iodine.
Right.
And iodine is used for staining in order to provide contrast. And then I'm just washing it with ethyl alcohol. And once this is done, we're going to go ahead and place it under the microscope.
And that's to get the contrast so it's just more easily viewable under the microscope, right?
Exactly. Again, kind of standard staining techniques, but usually used for microbiology. But we're just using it for these tissue samples here. Now, I'm going to flatten this out with another slide because it's a little too tall. It's pretty, you know, chunky here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to kind of flatten it out a little bit. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah.
And now we're going to go ahead and place this under the microscope in real time. Again, because the reason I'm doing this is I don't want anybody to think that any of this is, you know, faked or anything like that.
Right, doing the whole thing live. My God.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Oof.
Make it that graphic right there.
No, but I mean, but look, this is what's in people's body. This is what's being removed from people's damaged hearts, and you can see why. I mean, my God. For the radio viewers, so I don't even know how to describe it. You got to just see the image.
But go back to the microscope image, if you would, please. Yeah, help describe this for the radio viewers, but we're going to start zooming in on this, and we're going to get a lot more contrast and information. I have to refocus as we move. But what I want you to notice about this, and again, this is coming out of people who were formerly alive. People are walking around with these things growing inside
right.
their arteries and blood vessels, okay? That these are massive. These are not the size of just one protein. These are like billions of proteins, and these are strands. In fact, I want to show you something. Let me zoom out. I want to show you something that's just going to blow your mind. If I grab this with the forceps here, and you can see that on screen, and I start to pull, I want to show you how much I can pull and how strong these are before this breaks.
Oh, wow.
You see how they are fibrous and they are strong. They're like rubber bands.
Right, and it looks like it has the consistency of, and I hate to even put it this, but it looks like something like raw calamari. I mean, it looks like some sort of rubbery seafood.
Yep.
But not something you'd want to eat. I mean, it looks
That's a good description, raw calamari. But understand that these are not clumps of blood. That's what I'm trying to get across.
Right.
There's no way that these are blood clots. These are, I call them engineered biostructures.
Right.
So something in people's bodies is programming them to build these biostructures inside their arteries. And for anyone watching who is skeptical, they might think, no, those look like blood vessels. You must have taken the blood vessels or the capillaries. No, this is inside the blood vessels.
And I can just tell from the sort of rubbery consistency of it, it's not blood. I mean, it clearly is something... it doesn't look natural to me.
No.
It looks like seafood, like raw sort of, squid parts.
Well, let me show you now. Here's I stained these yesterday using a different staining technique. Oh, we're about to go to break. When we come back, I'm going to show you this because there's a lot more detail.
Yeah, you can see the detail there. Wow. All right. I'm going to stick around as we do this live experiment here. Incredibly disturbing, folks. Again, if you're a radio listener, I can I can only describe it so well. You've got to go to band.video and see the images we are broadcasting live as we look through the microscope into the depths of hell, really. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm Harrison Smith. I'm sitting in studio with Mike Adams, who has this very impressive microscope array. And while it is a microscope that we're dealing with, the samples are not microscopic. The samples are actually fairly large, about the size of a half-dollar piece or so, but scrunched up, just so people understand sort of the scale that we're operating at. So we just saw the sort of raw, undried and just slightly stained sort of fresh sample. But now we have something else that we're looking at here, Mike. What are we seeing on the screen now?
Yeah, so we're showing, this is another clot that was removed from a formerly living person. And I understand that if you're looking at this right now, you think it's maybe a piece of dried chicken jerky or something. It is not. This came out of a living person, a formerly living person's blood vessels or arteries. And I've only stained this one with iodine, which explains why the color is more yellowish and not purplish. But this one has what appears to be what I would call a kind of a wire type of substance. We're going to zoom in on that. And I want your reaction, Harrison, to, here, let me zoom in, what you think this is. There, you see that structure?
Oh, wow, yeah.
That is made of repeating patterns. And if the producers could show the images, this is from folder number 7. These are repeating patterns at the very high resolution. They look like almost reptilian scales.
Wow.
On the side. And yeah, there you go.
Right.
See those reptilian scales?
So the actual material that we're looking at, it looks like dried meat. It looks almost like prosciutto or something because it's dried and because it's been stained with iodine. But on top of that is this thin, I mean, it looks like hair to me. It looks like images you've seen, you know, from crime scenes or whatever, where they zoom in on the hair to identify it. It looks like a human hair. It's a very thin sort of tubular structure that is about as thick. It looks like it's about as thick as a human hair.
Well, it is, just to avoid any confusion, this is definitely not hair because
right.
This came out of a person's blood vessels.
Right.
So what happens is when the embalmer is pushing embalming fluid into someone's arteries and then blood is coming out, sometimes with clots, sometimes slightly congealed. But these things are what's coming out of people now, these clots that we're looking at here. And this hair-like fiber, which is kind of like a wire, to me it doesn't look like a hair under the microscope. Because I've looked at a lot of hair, and the hairs don't normally have these kinds of repeating structures.
Interesting.
And if you go to very, very high resolution, which is very difficult to focus, you're actually going to see structures in here that look like scaly, you know, skin-like.
Right.
Which is very different because hair normally has these linear fibers, but not cross-sections like this. So what I'm saying is that looking at this is shocking to me because, number one, none of this belongs in the human body.
Right.
This is being found in people who have, quote, died suddenly. And embalmers have never seen these things until after the vaccine started being given to people.
I'm telling you, it's horrific seeing it in person. I hope it's coming across, the television screens because it's just disturbing. It's a disturbing thing to see. It's clearly not natural. Yeah, it doesn't look like human hair. It almost looks glass-like, or I don't know if crystalline is an appropriate word, but it certainly doesn't look like the rest of the material. It's something else entirely.
We're looking at a live microscope feed here, just for those radio or TV listeners, and that's why I'm manipulating this, and the focus is going in and out because I'm changing lenses and so on.
Right. This is not something pre-recorded or done in a lab or, you know, a lab somewhere else. This is, we're looking at this live and manipulating the microscope here live. And are we at, what's the zoom that we're at here?
We are at 75x right now. I want to show you, you see this white spot in the middle here?
Right.
One of our guests is going to talk about this, how some of the blood that comes out of these people appears to be somewhat chalky. And we're seeing these strange white particles, and they are in focus right now, and we'll increase the magnification. But these resisted staining, so whatever these are not normal biological cells, which would be stained. You can see everything else here in the clot has been stained.
Right.
But these white particles, they have almost a crystalline type of structure. I'll zoom in even more here, which will be a challenge, but...
Right. So with the staining, it almost takes on a bark-like color. It looks like jerky or prosciutto. I mean, it looks like some sort of dried meat, but then there's this white speck that almost looks like, to me, just like a speck of salt or something, but clearly it's not that.
It's almost crystalline
in
structure, or you could say perhaps it's a polymer, maybe a microplastic particle or something, but these are being seen in the blood that's coming out of people who died suddenly. In fact, we're going to bring in our guest shortly who's standing by, but this is not normal. These are not blood clots. And just for comparison, again, let me put the blood sample actually on here.
And so that little white chunk, that is microscopic. I mean, that's a tiny thing that you almost can't see with the human eye. With a microscope,
can't see with the human eye.
You can see this little tiny white spot on top of this.
Normal blood looks like this, okay? And that's just dried blood.
Right.
Right. You notice it doesn't have strands. It doesn't have fibers. It doesn't have, you know, twisty, turny tentacles or anything like that.
No. Yeah.
That's
like blood.
Normal blood.
Right.
And that's a little blood clot effectively because it's just congealed.
Right.
Scabbed blood. So that's the difference, folks. And that's what I wanted to show here today. Now we got to bring in our doctor who is here with a voice changer in order to protect his identity. Can we confirm that he's with us right now? Okay. Doctor, can you hear me, and have you been able to see some of these images?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can't see these images. I'm on the road right now, but I saw what you sent me yesterday. I discussed with you a few months ago about some of the experiments I did, and we don't have to talk about that right now, but apparently what's happening is these injections are reprogramming our DNA or RNA to produce these new proteins that forming these new structures. What prompted me to call you was that we're seeing a huge influx of people that are coming into the hospitals and the urgent cares with what we call claudication, which is usually from peripheral vascular disease or peripheral artery disease, which are blockages in the in their extremities. That can cause issues with blood flow to your tissue. And we're seeing a huge skyrocketing the amount of patients that we're seeing that have these types of issues.
So are these...
In the one picture I showed.
Sorry to interrupt, but did you see any of this before the vaccines started, or was it very rare before that? Or what's the difference between, 3 years ago versus today in terms of the numbers?
I wouldn't say it's rare, but it's not to this extent. This is skyrocketed, and we're seeing it in relatively young patients, which is unheard of. We're seeing this in people in their 40s, 50s, 60s. When you start getting into your 70s and 80s, that's when you start having some issues, and it's relatively rare. But people with heart disease, usually these people that we see with these problems, we know have heart disease, because if you have blockages in your heart, you're going to have blockages in your other extremities. So those are the type of patients we usually see this in. We're seeing this in patients that have never had any of these problems.
So as you were talking there, doctor, and I'm just going to call you doctor. We're protecting your identity, and I appreciate you being willing to come on. We were just showing for the video viewers a massive clot that was pulled out of someone's carotid artery. It was about the diameter of a human finger. And my question to you is, are you seeing other symptoms of people having arterial blockage or requiring arterial bypass surgery, things like that?
Yes, we are. There's a procedure called FEMPOP, which is the femoral popliteal artery bypass. One of the hospitals that I work with, the vascular surgery service is booked for months for these types of procedures. So they're artificially bypassing.
Okay, there you saw the microscopic video of engineered biostructures removed from blood vessels. And mind you, that's biostructures that are not normal, and no one has seen these before. Now we're going to the New Zealand scientist who's examining Pfizer's vaccine under the microscope and explaining what, for the first time, and he's a specialist in this area. He's a leading specialist in New Zealand in this area, a highly respected person in his field. And this is what he does. Let's hear now and see what he is going to explain he believes is happening.
However, within the wider circle of those questioning the COVID narrative, a common theme is that something is badly wrong with the offered solution in the form of experimental vaccines. By early 2020, globalist organizations were indicating the rollout of their touted universal vaccines and an injection in every arm. In 2021, citizen scientists began examining the injections under the microscope, and the revelations were startling. At the forefront of the research has been the La Quinta Columna team, who have produced many light and electron micrograph images, as well as detailed analysis of self-assembling particles, graphene components, and potential nanotechnology. Here in New Zealand, we also have several teams who have backed up these findings. Of course, there have been dismissals that we are just seeing artifacts or innocent crystals. That's why we asked Dr. Robin Wakeling, a senior microbiologist and nano-emulsion delivery technology expert, to perform his own analysis of the Pfizer BioNTech product. He joined my husband, Dr. Mark Bailey, to explain the behavior of the product under the microscope, over time, and under the influence of various environmental factors. He compares his findings to known colloidal structures and other vaccines, and as per other investigators around the world, reaches some disturbing conclusions.
I'm going to dive right in off the deep end into a quick abstract of the findings, and then I'm going to step back and explain those findings so that they're understandable. So don't worry if the first few images don't make sense. There are three main findings that the microscopic images that we're producing are suggesting, the key findings. So the first one is that the lipid nanoparticles that are contained in Comirnaty, and I'll explain what LNPs are in a moment, but it appears that they are continuing to self-assemble in a way that forms much larger colloidal structures of some highly varied and somewhat rarefied forms. The second main key finding was that these colloidal structures then seem to change their form in response to collision with interfaces like the glass surfaces of the microscope preparations or air bubbles or other interfaces, whereby they start to take on a much more structured and unnatural formation with a lot of straight lines and right angles, sort of things that don't usually occur in nature outside of crystallography. And what we're going to be showing most of the time has some profound differences to crystal structure. So we'll cover that too. And so the third finding, which is where the other two kind of lead to, and it's where other workers have sort of jumped into the deep end with some of the dark field work that's been done. These right-angled sheets and wires that seem to form from the colloidal structures go on in some situations where it appears that some environmental triggers are involved. More about that later. They seem to order themselves in a highly ordered, complex way, in a way that is quite unusual. It's certainly not something that the people who are looking at this have seen before. And these are people who should be familiar with this sort of thing. So those are the three main findings. I'm just going to show some very quick images to illustrate those. So this is a light micrograph of these colloidal structures that form from the lipid nanoparticles. What you're looking at there, this thing in the middle here, looks a bit like a jellyfish. I'll keep restarting the video so you can see it moving. But this is a very large coalescence of lipid nanoparticles, most likely. So you've got a large droplet here. I apologize, there's no scale on this one. There is a scale on some of the others, but this is about 15 microns across. So it's a spherical droplet of something. And then there's a tail coming off that, a series of much smaller droplets all joined up to form a long tail. And this one up here, you can see, is a slightly smaller droplet with a very long tail on it, where all the droplets have coalesced into this long.
And now for those of you who are listening just on WBAI, we have to say goodbye because they only have 5 minutes left. They have to use that for the news. But you can continue listening on PRN.live. And remember, on PRN.live, I only am able to share a small percentage of the articles and footnotes and references that I prepare each day. So if you go scroll down, going to PRN.live to Gary Nall Show in the notes, you'll see all of the notes and information that document what I'm saying. Now, to try to put this into lay language so everyone can understand, first we saw actual video of this being taken. Again, this came from a heart of a person who died, and the mortician and the pathologist were very concerned because no one's ever seen this before. This is not something that's normal to the human body or biochemistry. So then you saw that Mike was stretching it, and it looks like rubber bands to me, but it's made up of different molecules from our own biochemistry, and it seems to be bringing itself together. And so what does that mean? Well, to get a better understanding of what it means it came from the vaccines, and it's something we've never seen and nobody anticipated, nobody was warned about, because if they showed this clip that I just showed at the beginning, not a single person would have taken the vaccines. But now that people have taken the vaccines, billions, then what is the potential harm to them? For that, then we showed the New Zealand expert who works in this area and different teams of doctors and scientists in New Zealand are working on this and coming up with some of the results. Now, we only played you a short summary clip, but the rest of the hour you can watch yourself in your own leisure time to try to understand it. It is a little technical, but to understand this, we've invited Richard Gale on to explain this and its ramifications. Richard, explain, first of all, what you perceive when you saw this being put under the microscope, and then it, you know, he was pulling it to see how long it would stretch and before it broke, and what it means when this is could be manifesting in billions of people's bodies.
Yes, Gary. Well, I think the unusual thing, and what the this doctor, his name was Whiting or Wakeling, was his name, Dr. Wakeling. He noted that it was unusual, and he really didn't have couldn't really account for was these kind of this lipid molecule, this fat molecule that is called a PEG, and this is an engineered nanolipid molecule. It's not something found in nature. It's an engineered fat lipid molecule that's used in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines that had these kind of these long tails. There's the one image in which the tail, it's like a very, very, very fine thin thread, which is could be as much as in length about 8 to 10 times the diameter size of this lipid fat molecule, PEG. And so if you think of just, take a drop of vegetable oil and put it on a drop of water, you'd have this nice round little, droplet. Right, but he's finding these long threads that are coming from it, which really can't be accounted for. Now, this PEG molecule, of course, is what encapsulates the mRNA that's in the vaccine. And as he says, there's each one of these lipids, and it's called a liposome. That's the proper name, a liposome. It contains about 50,000 molecules, and there are millions of these liposomes in the vaccine, right? So, and then consequently, there are billions of these molecules, these lipid molecules, that then arrange themselves, and that's what passes through the cell membrane, and it will deliver its payload, which is the mRNA, directly into the cell, and then the cells, what's called transcriptase. That's what helps the cell to be able to manufacture from the code of the mRNA to create a spike protein. It's the COVID spike protein in the cell. And then, as we know now, remember, the spike to this mRNA, this is genetically engineered also. This is not an mRNA that's naturally found in coronaviruses. It's a genetically engineered RNA that is just based on the COVID kind of sequencing, but it's been altered. And we know now, based on the Swedish research, you know, that this genetically engineered mRNA can be programmed into our own cells' DNA, which then would become a permanent genetic alteration to our DNA. So I think that's the basic, the basic scene. Now, what he was witnessing was one of the things that's very interesting, and people may remember, and this was a big problem, why is it that the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines have to be kept and stored at such sub-zero degree temperatures? We're talking about minus 60, minus 70 degrees Celsius.
From WPFW in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Monday, August 29th. Here are some headlines. Officials in Mississippi have issued mandatory evacuation orders for some residents in the capital city of Jackson ahead of expected flooding. The Pearl River, which has been swollen by heavy rains that started last week, is predicted to crest tonight at 35.5 feet. The mark is just shy of major flood stage, which is 36 feet at this point along the river, according to the United States Geological Survey, and lower than previously anticipated, but it's still high enough to flood streets. At least 150 homes are expected to be affected by the flooding, Jackson Mayor Chokwe Antar Lumumba said Saturday, telling residents to get out now. Authorities are warning communities facing the highest risk are the same ones affected by flooding more than 2 years ago, when the Pearl River reached its third highest crest on record at 36.7 feet. FBI agents have finished their review of possibly privileged documents seized in the August 8th search of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. A so-called filter team identified a limited set of materials that potentially contain attorney-client privileged information. That's according to a Justice Department court filing today that came in response to a ruling Saturday by U.S. District Judge Eileen M. Cannon to hold a hearing this week on Trump's motion seeking the appointment of a special master. The former president's lawyers claim that federal authorities seized records to which they had no legal right. Today's ruling may undercut the former president's efforts to have a special master appointed to review the files. In related news, the Department of Justice and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence are conducting a damage assessment of the classified documents recovered from last week's search of Mar-a-Lago. In a letter dated Friday, Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines told House Oversight Committee Chair Carolyn Maloney and House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff that her office will lead the, quote, assessment of the potential damage to national security that would result from the disclosure of the relevant documents, close quote. The correspondence represents the Biden administration's first known engagement with Congress concerning the retrieval of classified documents from Trump's private residence. Court documents unsealed in recent days reveal that the Justice Department is investigating potential violations of the Presidential Records Act, the Espionage Act, and obstruction of justice. And gun violence spiked in the U.S. this weekend as a number of shootings took place across several states. At least three people died after a gunman armed with an AR-15-style rifle opened fire on a Safeway store in Bend, Oregon, Sunday night. The shooter was also found dead at the scene.